history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some stories out there that need to be heard. Sometimes all it takes is for us to ask a few questions and be willing to listen. And we are more than ready to do that today with 94-year-old Henry Oshner of California City, California. Not the biggest place in the world. The sign coming in says 13,000 people. Out in the Mojave Desert, but the Oshners have lived here for quite a while. He and Violet recently celebrated their 70th anniversary. But I got to get the name straight, though. Every article I read about you says Henry, but you go by Leonard.
Well, Henry Leonard is the way it goes.
Uh-huh.
And my mother always said, but the name was Leonard Henry. But my birth certificate says Henry Leonard. But usually for business, like when we worked for Hughes Aircraft and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We worked on the Trident and Polaris and everything like that.
Yeah.
My name was always Henry, but my friends started calling me Len, so I just let it go, you know. So that
Len sounds good enough for me. And, of course, the purpose of this program is to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, boy, do we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, and often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Mr. Oshner is 94 years old. He served in one of the most well-known units of World War II. Maybe you were a fan of the TV series Band of Brothers. Maybe you've read books about that. But Easy Company of the 506th Parachute Infantry Regiment, part of the 101st Airborne, the Screamin' Eagles. We're going to hear about that, but that's not how it started out with your military story.
Easy Company is Band of Brothers.
Exactly. But that's not where you started out. And let's go way back. So you are the son of a World War I veteran.
Yes, uh-huh.
What did your father do in World War I?
He was infantry.
Did he tell you much about it?
No, not a word.
Was that something you always kind of found interesting, though, seeing his uniform and all?
No, it was before I was born.
Uh-huh. And did you have brothers and sisters growing up?
Three sisters and myself.
And tell us where you grew up.
In Missoula, Montana.
Was the Great Depression really felt there in Missoula?
I think it was, yeah, uh-huh. We had enough to eat and everything, you know, but there's some people didn't.
And you were aware of that?
Yes, uh-huh.
I don't want to miss anything in between, and feel free to insert, but one question I like to ask everybody, because it seems like everybody remembers something, but December 7th, 1941, do you remember where you were and how you found out about Pearl Harbor?
I was living in Youngstown, a little district in Seattle. I was driving my car, had the car radio on, and they said that the Japanese had been bombing Pearl Harbor. I pulled over and listened to it, you know, but it was pretty awful, I think.
Yeah, probably kind of hard to believe or hard to understand.
Yeah, yeah.
And did it occur to you then, or was it a while before you realized that you were going to end up part of this?
I really didn't think I was. You know, it didn't bother me. They started a draft,
mm-hmm.
and I signed up for that. You had to.
Mm-hmm.
I was drafted the late part of 42. They took me in,
mm-hmm.
and I signed the papers in July of 43. Went downtown. They give you all this medical examinations and everything to see if you're going to be worthy to fight for them, you know. I passed it all. They said, go home, we'll notify you. And it wasn't a week, 2 weeks. They said, report down to the King Street train station. We have a troop train for you to board and go to your training. I did that. They went right down to Camp Roberts. We all got off, and they marched us across the tracks over into the Camp Roberts.
Paso Robles, California.
Uh-huh.
And were you prepared for what the Army was going to do to you or try to get you to do?
No, I had no idea what was going to happen. They lined us up out there after we were there about a week, 2 weeks, something like that. They asked for volunteers to know how to drive a truck.
Mm-hmm.
I said, here I am. Guess what they gave me? A wheelbarrow.
You guys would have to crawl under barbed wire or under a hail of bullets, live bullets
live
going over your head.
30 caliber machine gun.
That's enough to kill you if you pop your head
up.
Easily. And I've never talked to anybody who actually got hit. You're showing me on your right leg. You still have a scar.
My left leg.
I don't know my right from my left. Your left leg, I can see the scar right there. But that happened in training at Camp Roberts?
Yeah. We was going through the infiltration course, and you're on your belly, and I got my M1. At that time, I had a carbine because they put me in the field artillery. And I'm crawling along under this barbed wire. The barbed wire is that far off the ground.
Right, just a couple feet.
And
just
it's enough intertwined, to crawl intertwined over an area just bigger than this house.
Uh-huh.
And you crawl there, and you go through it, all the way across it. And if you get across it, you've done past that part. Then, of course, you do the rest of the training. But I'm crawling along there, and I had never in my life seen a big spider. So I'm crawling along, and I stopped. I saw this spider. He must have been at least 6 inches across.
Big hairy tarantula?
Uh-huh.
Woo.
And I'd never seen a spider that big. So I looked at him, and he's sitting there. I turned to the right a little bit, and it seemed he turned to the right a little, to his left a little bit. I said, no. So I went back, and he turned and he looked at me again. I went this way, and he looked at it again. I says, oh, the hell with it, and I stood up. That's when the bullet hit me. He'd only had a chance to fire one shell. He'd let loose as a butterfly to keep from killing me, you know, to chopping me in half. So they took me to the hospital. They got me all well, and they said, we're not putting you back in the field artillery. We're giving you infantry because you done goofed it all up.
And you pointed out, if that guy doesn't react quickly enough on the machine gun, he could have sawed you in half.
Could have cut me out.
Sure. Have you ever seen a spider like that again in all these years?
Oh, yeah. We used to go out on field trips where we'd put on our full pack and a rifle. And you march out about 8 miles or something like that. And then you camp for the night. Well, at night, the spiders like something warm, so they would crawl alongside your sleeping bag to keep warm, you know?
No, thank you.
After that, it didn't bother me, you know? After.
Well, and at least they were big enough you could use them for target practice, right?
No, I never bothered with them. I couldn't see killing them.
Yeah, even though they almost got you killed, that one did. And when you point out what happened to the unit you were with or where they would have gone, have you heard stories about what that field artillery unit encountered?
I was told by our lieutenant they were selected to go to South Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
But where, I don't know.
But you would have headed out sooner.
I'd have went with them, yeah.
As it was, though, you were involved in the longest day, as well as one of the most infamous battles of World War II in Europe. And you mentioned going over to England. At what point were you told, or is this something you volunteered for, that you were going to be glider infantry?
You don't volunteer for gliders.
Mm-hmm.
You're just like infantry.
Right.
If they want you here, they put you there. So I was put into this glider outfit of the 101st. I was with them for about a month and a half, and then we had to take glider flight to qualify to be a glider man, you know?
Sure.
In the meantime, they would teach you how to take and put a Jeep in one of those gliders and tie it down just so that when you wanted out, you just started up the Jeep and started driving, and it would raise the front, and you could drive out. And then the ammunition and a little 75-millimeter howitzer, a little small thing.
Right. I've seen all that loaded into a glider, and it's hard to believe that a powerless aircraft can carry all of that in addition to men.
Yeah,
but that's the way they built them.
Plus the crew.
And were you at all nervous about that duty, about being in a glider?
No, it didn't bother me.
Uh-huh.
So anyhow, we're all in this glider. There's nothing in there but us GIs. No ammunition, no guns, no Jeep. It's just us. And we're along the sides. You know, you sit on along the side, and you're facing in on a little bench. The pilot come in. He said, ready, boys? And he's a little on the tipsy side. So I didn't pay no attention to that. So we're hooked up to a C-47 with a big, long nylon cable. Yeah, not a cable. It's a line, a nylon line. And it's about 1.5, 2 inches in diameter. You watch the C-47 take off down the runway, and you're still here. The pilot's got the brakes on. So the tail starts raising up because line is hooked up to a triangle thing on the top of the glider, just about where the pilot sits.
Right.
And it kind of pulls, and then it kind of raises up the tail. And when it gets to a certain point, this pilot decides that's enough, and he'll release the brakes, and that gives you an extra push to get off the ground. This nylon rope, it gets down to about, I would say, maybe inch and a quarter, 2 inches maybe. Then you go up, and he gets to the right or the left of the 47 to stay out of the prop wash and help the airplane better to get off the ground and everything. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have to go as far that way. And so we're up in the air, and we're being tied to this 47, and there's three gliders hooked to it. There's one below the airplane, and then us, and then another one over here, over to your right. You go around up there for a while, and he watches the other gliders. When they release, he lets them get out of the way, and then he says, okay, here we go down. And he hit the lever, and we got released from the C-47. And we coast around and come down the landing field to begin with where it first starts. It's about a 3-foot bank. The concrete stops right there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about 3 feet high because it was down a little wash. And then, of course, you've got the regular runway. But he was on the spoilers. The pilot did the spoilers, and he was coming in like that, you know, which that was slows it down.
Mm-hmm.
He misjudged it. He was a little too. He was about that much too low. The landing gear hit that little concrete abutment there, and off they came. They left. It took off on an angle across, off into the field next to the runway. And there's a bunch of trees over there. And we're going pretty good clip. Out left, we're on the runners now. There's runners underneath of it.
Right.
And he goes between two trees. And just on the other side of the trees, it stopped. He turned around and looked at it. He said, pretty good landing. We stepped out the door. There's no wings, no tail, just a fuselage sitting there. And I said, oh, my God. Maybe next time won't be so lucky. So we was back in our little barracks. We was bivouacked on a farm. We was living in a barn. So about a week after we got back after that flight, this guy came around, this officer, and he says, we need volunteers for the paratroopers. Raised my hand. I said, hey, right here. Because I wasn't going to ride them gliders no more.
And you mentioned volunteering for paratrooper duty, different from the glider infantry. You're already in the 101st, as you told us. Did you ever come to a point where you regretted that? You wondered what you got yourself into?
No. I more or less enjoyed it.
Enjoyed it?
I really enjoyed it. I went through jump school there in England.
Uh-huh.
For some reason, I didn't get no set of wings, and I wasn't even notified that I was in it. There was me and about 20 other guys that volunteered to be paratroopers. I was never put on the roster.
Hmm.
So anyhow, I went through the training. I made a bunch of jumps, some for qualifying and some for exhibition for other officers and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
For other officers and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then on June the 4th or the 5th, they put us, they said, okay, get packed, we're leaving. And they put everything in my duffel bag, and I put on my pack and my gun, and they marched us to this airfield. And here's all these C-47s. There was a whole bunch of them. I don't know how many. Maybe 100. Who knows? So I went. I was assigned an airplane. I said, you go there, you go here, you go there, you go there. We went in and we sat down. And as a bench along the inside on both sides of the airplane, you just sat down. You didn't really hook up yet until he tells you to hook up. We're sitting there, and then pretty soon he says, okay, hook up. I guess they were deciding when we were going to go. They didn't know. There's bad weather here, bad weather there. Then they took off, and we went over the channel and got over to France.
And so began the longest day, D-Day, June 6, 1944, for Len Ochsner. It's break time, but when we come back, where Mr. Ochsner landed with the 506th Parachute Infantry Regiment and the simple but powerful lesson he learned shortly thereafter. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say, I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly a 250,000 EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 800 veterans have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328.